The Guardian.
Ketamine is most commonly known as a party drug, something that people take to feel out of it, or for its psychedelic properties. Its abuse also has the potential for severe long-term health consequences. So it might sound like an unlikely candidate for treating addiction and mental illnesses like depression. But there are a growing number of scientists who believe the drug could help people suffering from these conditions, which are notoriously difficult to treat, and which affect millions of people in the UK each year. Over the next two episodes of Science Weekly, we're going to be talking to people using ketamine to pioneer new treatments for both alcohol addiction and depression, but in completely different ways. First up, this week, we're focusing on alcohol addiction and ketamine. Ravi Das is a psychopharmacologist at University College London. His latest research has explored the use of ketamine as a treatment for reducing heavy drinking. I started off by asking Ravi exactly what ketamine is and how it works when it's administered.
People probably know it most from it being sort of recreationally used, largely during the 90s and in the noughties. Its use is dropping off now in the UK, but people use it as kind of a party drug to feel, you know, more relaxed or to get a high. If you take it in sort of higher doses, it can be slightly hallucinogenic, so people used it for that reason. But what it's mainly used for, its medical purpose, is as an anaesthetic, for children particularly, because it doesn't suppress breathing like a lot of other anaesthetics do. It's used quite frequently on the NHS for children, also in field medicine. So in war zones, for instance, it's a much better analgesic and anaesthetic than the opioids. It's on the WHO's list of essential medicines. So it has to be stocked in drugs cabinets around the world, in hospitals, basically. And it's garnered a lot more attention recently as a psychiatric drug. Back in the 90s in Russia, there was a guy called Evgeny Kapritsky who was looking at it for addictive disorders, so opioids, alcoholism. He did some really interesting research, actually, but unfortunately was stopped by the Russian government because they have a blanket ban on being able to research any drug with abuse potential for treating an addictive disorder. But that work was followed up by a former colleague of mine, Celia Morgan, who's currently doing a clinical trial looking at ketamine for alcoholism. And then the work that I've been doing has been looking at using ketamine in a very kind of specific way to see if we can help people with heavy drinking problems.
Could you just tell me a bit more about why you might want to use ketamine to help with addiction?
It's a really interesting drug in many ways. It has lots of actions in the brain. It acts at a few receptors, one of which is one that we were particularly interested in our research at UCL, called the NMDA receptor. And that's involved in learning and memory and the signaling from a neurotransmitter called glutamate. And that's the main neurotransmitter that excites neurons, makes them fire, basically. It also has these effects on opioid receptors. So it can cause these sort of feelings of relaxation and also, you know, numb pain. More recently, it's been shown that it can enhance neural plasticity, which is the brain's ability to sort of rewire itself, if you will, in a simplified manner. It acts on certain pathways that increase neurogenesis, potentially, so the creation of new neurons. And also in alcoholism and other drug use disorders, there's many ways it could work, but it's not that we're just replacing the rewarding effects of one drug with another. It's doing something to the brain to allow it to reconfigure itself potentially out of the addicted network state.
You've just published a study looking at the potential for ketamine to help people who are very heavy drinkers. I'd really like to hear a bit more about kind of what the logic was behind the study.
So it sounds silly to say we're not interested in ketamine and then do a study on it, but we weren't specifically interested in ketamine as a drug in of its own right. But what causes people to start drinking too much in the first place? What are the mechanisms that make people continue to drink too much when they might objectively want to cut down, but then find that they have trouble controlling that? And one of the main things seems to be learning. All animals are pretty good at learning about rewards, so how to maximise rewards and minimise punishment. So we've got these very strong inbuilt systems to learn about things that are rewarding. And all addictive drugs are rewarding intrinsically. Like, you learn to associate the taste of beer with the pleasant feeling of alcohol. Most kids, when they first taste a beer, they don't like the taste of it. It's something that's learned through this pairing with the rewarding effects. So when those associations that you learn become very powerful, they can cause this kind of automatic behavioural routine where you're in a certain scenario, the smell of beer maybe triggers off a really strong feeling to want to drink, and then you end up drinking when you maybe didn't want to.
So the idea is that these memories that you have, these associations you've learned, are helping to drive this bad habit of just drinking, I don't know, whenever you stop making your dinner or, I don't know, get home from work.
Yeah, it's a learned habit, yeah.
And is the thinking that because these triggers are ones that you just encounter in your day-to-day, that it's sort of embedded in your day-to-day life, it's just really hard to avoid them and to therefore stop drinking?
Yeah, alcohol's a particularly tough one in that regard. Alcohol adverts are everywhere, so it's really hard to avoid triggers. We're not going to be getting rid of alcohol advertising anytime soon, I don't think, so we needed to find a way to break down the ability for those triggers to cause those sort of patterns of behaviour that produce drinking.
And so where does ketamine come in this kind of quest to break down those associations that so many of us have learnt with alcohol?
So I mentioned this receptor, the NMDA receptor, and I said that was fundamentally involved in learning and memory. So one of the key memory processes that it's involved in is this thing called reconsolidation. And we all kind of think that our memories are accurate reflections of the past and that they're sort of learned and then fixed. And that was kind of the dominant theory, actually, in psychology and neuroscience for a long time. But now we know that memory is kind of a more reconstructive process. And sometimes when you recall a memory, it returns to this kind of active state where it can be changed. So that depends on some very certain parameters when you're retrieving the memory. It's not like every time you recall a memory, it becomes unstable. But once it is in this unstable state, it requires activity at this receptor called the NMDA receptor to restabilize once it's become unstable. So if you get in at the right time with ketamine, you can block that receptor, stop that process of restabilization, and potentially directly target problematic, unhelpful memories.
That's it for part one. In part two, we'll hear more about Ravi's research and ask whether this treatment is likely to be available in doctors' surgeries anytime soon.
I'm Anushka Astana, and this is Today in Focus. We're bringing you general election coverage every day from Hartlepool.
I mean, the government talk about left behind towns and left behind places, and actually that presupposes they were ever at the same starting point.
To Belfast.
I'm old enough to remember getting on the bus and them coming on with sniffer dogs to find out if there were bombs under the seats.
We're talking to people and not just politicians to really get to the heart of this election. Subscribe now wherever you download your podcasts.
Welcome back. Earlier, we heard why the memory-disrupting properties of ketamine make it such an interesting drug to psychopharmacologist Ravi Das. Ravi says that alcohol dependence is partly driven by associations between alcohol and the brain's reward system. And so the hope was that ketamine could be used to break some of these unhelpful associations. Ravi talked me through exactly how he tested this theory in his recent experiment. So the people you recruited onto your study, who were they, and did you have any sort of parameters for how much they had to be drinking to take part?
Yeah, we had quite specific criteria, actually. So we didn't want people who were receiving treatment for an alcohol use disorder, because this is a very much an experimental treatment, and we didn't want to interfere for any reason that made people worse. We didn't want to interfere with ongoing treatment. So they were people who drank a physically harmful amount. So they were drinking at least 40 units a week if they were men, or 30 units a week if they were women. They also had to score above a certain threshold on this screening questionnaire for alcohol use disorders. So they're what you would call hazardous drinkers, basically. They're drinking a lot. They don't have full-blown alcohol use disorder, but they're at kind of higher risk for transitioning into that. And they're at quite high risk of a lot of negative health outcomes like liver, disease, heart disease, you know, all the bad stuff associated with heavy drinking, basically.
So in your study, you wanted to get people to have that memory of drinking or kind of activate that memory and then somehow destabilize it and then block it from reforming. That was the plan.
Exactly, yeah.
And in practice, how did you do that?
So there's some key elements, basically. I mentioned that there's a few things that determine when a memory becomes unstable. One of the key ones is that a kind of brief retrieval. If you have people thinking about it for too long, they actually start forming new, different memory traces. So we wanted to get people to recall their memories about drinking briefly. The other one seems to be for these kind of alcohol reward memories that we were targeting, that there needs to be some surprise about the reward that people are expecting not being given. So it might sound a bit cruel, but you give people a half pint of beer and tell them that they're going to drink it after rating some nice pictures of beer. So, you know, nice frothy pints, people drinking, the kind of images that you might see and make you want to drink. And then afterwards, they expect to drink the beer, but they actually don't get to drink it. We take it away. And so it creates that mismatch, that error in prediction of the reward being given that sparks this destabilization of the memory. Straight after that, we give people an intravenous infusion of ketamine or placebo. And then one other group got the ketamine on its own without doing this memory destabilizing procedure.
And what was the outcome when they got the half pint taken away?
They were surprised, particularly because on the first day we'd done a similar procedure, but they actually get to drink the drink. And we found from past research that you need to do that to get people to genuinely expect to want the drink. Because previously, when we haven't done that, people, you give them a pint of beer and they think, there's no way I'm going to be able to drink this during the study. So they're not surprised at all. It helped that I think they were fasted for 6 hours on solids before the ketamine infusion, which is standard medical procedure. So they probably really would have liked a drink, you know, they're probably quite thirsty. And so, yeah, that expectation was there and then it was kind of crushed, taken away. But, you know, it was a strong activation of that motivational feeling, that reward memory. And then, you know, when they got the ketamine, they exposed quite quickly, stopped worrying about the beer being taken away.
Calm down.
Yeah, calm down.
What kind of dose of ketamine were you giving and what sort of effects did the participants feel when they had it?
Yeah, it's quite an unusual way to get ketamine the way we gave it. We had this program that runs a syringe pump, basically. It's a big syringe full of ketamine with a line that goes into people's forearm, their vein. And it has an algorithm, basically, that based on your age and gender and height and weight, modifies the amount that's going in to maintain a concentration in your blood. Normally, when you take a drug, if you're taking it like you would on the street, taking it intranasally, then you get kind of a big peak, a big hit, and then it tails off. But with this infusion, it kind of stays at a steady level, the effects, for half an hour. So it would be the equivalent of quite a high dose, not enough of a dose to put people to sleep. So nowhere near the kind of doses that they use as an anaesthetic. But for a recreational dose, it would be very high, although it's, as I said, like quite difficult to compare those two. Some people, you can't even tell that they've had any drug. Some people have a really strong response to it. They're in a hospital bed, a hospital gurney at this point, so they're lying down anyway, and you generally can't see much from the outside because they're just kind of still. But then you'll go and check on them and ask how they're doing, and they'll, you know, take a couple of seconds to respond. Some people will say that they were just mentally inside and, you know, in a completely different world. So people had a range of experiences, from very little to feeling really sedated, quite out of it, feeling kind of out of the room almost. I hope he doesn't mind me throwing him under the bus, but my supervisor, Sanjeev, was one of the guinea pigs for piloting the doses. And he didn't make it to the dose that we used and was having a particularly sedative bad time.
And so what were the results of the study? What happened to these people who'd been drinking really heavily at the start of the study?
Yeah, when we got people back a week after doing the memory reactivation, ketamine or placebo day, We tested their responses to the alcohol images again, so pictures of beer, and also their responses to the actual half pint of beer again. And we asked them, you know, how much do you want to drink this? How much do you think you'll enjoy it? And so the people who got the ketamine after retrieving and destabilising their alcohol memories said that they wanted to drink the beer less and that they thought they would like it less. And when they actually tasted it, they liked it less, and they said that their urge to drink more, to like to have more beer, was a lot lower. And then that played out in their actual drinking, which we measured with like a drinking diary, basically, over the course of 9 months. And we saw that immediately before and after the ketamine and memory retrieval, they reduced their drinking and the number of days that they were drinking per week. And over the course of 9 months, they continued to reduce their drinking. So in that group, they went from drinking, I think, 84 units to about 40, so halved by 9 months.
Ravi points out that while these results are really promising, it is still early days, and that his findings need to be replicated by other teams. There is also an open question about whether the strategy would give the same results for people with a full diagnosis of alcohol addiction as it did for the people in his study, who were heavy drinkers but highly motivated to cut down.
I should point out that the other two groups, like the placebo group and the other just ketamine group, they also reduced their drinking. That's for any number of reasons. Taking part in the study itself shows that you've got some kind of motivation to change, right? And we specifically wanted people who wanted to reduce. So there's other potential mechanisms for that. But yeah, quite an unexpected reduction in drinking.
I wrote about your study and I straight away got an email from someone saying this is very irresponsible. You're suggesting that people should replace one drug with an even worse one. What would you say to that? Are there risks that need to be taken into account here with, you know, suggesting people have this intervention involving ketamine?
I'm not sure I agree with the premise that ketamine is more dangerous than alcohol. If you look at the physical harms, potentially not. I think that's up for debate. There are obviously concerns, being that ketamine is a drug with abuse potential, as we know. So I think the key points for people to take away are that this is a single dose given in a really controlled setting, medical grade ketamine under full medical supervision. It's not like we're prescribing ketamine for people to come and take. That would obviously be a minefield of problems. And we're not really replacing one drug with another at all. We're giving one dose. And if you think about the potential harms from a single dose of ketamine versus, you know, saving 40 units per week of drinking, the physical harms, costs between the two are not really even comparable.
So your study's been published. It was with people who had high levels of drinking, but they weren't people who had clinical disorders or hadn't been diagnosed with clinical disorders. What would the steps be for taking something like the intervention that you did into the clinic? Is that something that you think we're ready for?
It's a long road. The next big step will be a full clinical trial in people with alcohol use disorder. So we need to show that these findings replicate and that they're useful in a population who actually really needs treatment. If that's positive, then it'll still be, you know, a few years before anything actually reaches the clinic, as is always the way. But that is the aim. You know, the only reason I'm doing this research is to try and improve things at the treatment end and hopefully, you know, help people who are struggling with alcohol use problems.
Special thanks this week to Ravi Das. You can read more about his research in the interview we published with him at theguardian.com. I'll be back next week to look at the possible treatments for depression using ketamine.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.